We're live, we're local, and you're listening to A Juno Afternoon. It's Tuesday, January 30th. I'm your host, Julie Copens, here in the studio with producer Jeff Brown. Today, we'll find out about an upcoming fundraising dinner for REACH. Pat Race will be here with his next pet project. We'll get the details on how you can take part in the next Juno's Got Talent event. And Dr. Bridget Weiss, Director of Student Services, will be here to talk about the school district's various pre-K programs. That, Bird Note, Music, and more today during A Juno Afternoon. It's currently 22 degrees and partly sunny in the capital city. It'll be cloudy tonight with a low around 12 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Trump has signed legislation granting six Virginia tribes federal recognition status. U.S. Virginia lawmakers helped secure final passage of the legislation earlier this month. The tribes, which are recognized in Virginia, have been seeking federal recognition for years. Tribal leaders say the status will help in legal standing with the U.S. government and will also allow the tribes to seek opportunities and services in areas such as healthcare and education. Native groups are among those pleased the Cleveland Indians will retire its chief Wahoo mascot and logo. On Monday, Major League Baseball announced the team will remove the logo from its uniforms beginning in the 2019 season. The National Congress of American Indians has long advocated for the end of Indian mascots in professional sports and in schools. NCAI calls the announcement an important milestone for Indian country. According to NCAI and other groups involved in Change the Mascot movement, Indian mascots are damaging to Native people, especially the self-esteem of Native youth. British Columbia is taking the next step in the decade-long battle over tribal rights. The province has filed paperwork to appeal a decision which granted Washington State tribal members rights to their ancestral lands in Canada. Emily Schwing reports.
Back in 2009, Rick Desitel was charged for hunting without a permit and as a non-resident in British Columbia. He's one of roughly 4,000 Sinaix tribal members on the Colville Reservation in northeastern Washington. Sinaix traditional lands extend from the reservation north into British Columbia. Canada deemed the tribe extinct in 1956. But Desitel says he has a right to hunt on his ancestral lands, and a trial court and the Supreme Court of British Columbia agreed last year. But the provincial government has filed an application to appeal the case for a second time. In an email, a spokeswoman for the province's prosecution service explained that the appeal application will be considered within 60 days. A justice of the Court of Appeal will decide if a full appeal should be heard. I'm Emily Schwing reporting.
The Kalispell tribe wants to stop a proposed smelter from being permitted in northeast Washington near its reservation. Steve Jackson has more.
Members of the Kalispell Tribal Council met with Governor Jay Inslee in late December. At issue, there are concerns about the proposed high-test sand smelter, which would be built in Newport if approved by regulators. The proposal qualifies as a project of statewide significance and received $300,000 in the state to begin studies on the construction. The tribe has concerns with the amount of pollution it will produce and asked the governor to rescind that significance designation. HITEST's own draft modeling shows that the plant would emit some 320,000 tons of greenhouse gases, 760 tons of sulfur dioxide, and 700 tons of nitrogen oxide each year. Tribal Council spokesman Kurt Holmes says the appeal to the governor comes in part because of his strong push for reducing carbon emissions.
On one hand, you're going to support a smelter project that's going to burn coal, and yet the same day, you have this bill that calls for an end to coal burning by 2030. So it's kind of like, why would you invest in a $300 million project when, you know, you're only saying it has a 10-year window according to your own clean air bill?
Governor Inslee's policy advisor, Robert Duff, says the governor is committed to the State Environmental Policy Act and what he calls a rigorous permitting process to ensure environmental protection. He says if they don't go through the process, they will be challenged in court. The tribal spokesman says they worry that the air pollution released could have a detrimental health effect, especially on tribal members, because they're more susceptible to airborne particulates because of the high incidence of diabetes. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com. Support for Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation comes from the Montana State University in Bozeman, offering an on-campus master's and online graduate certificate in Native American Studies. More info can be found at montana.edu/Native American.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And we're back with a Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, joined in the studio now with Joanne Flora. She's the Fund Development Director for REACH. And we're going to learn all about REACH and what it does here in our community. Many great things for a lot of special people. In particular, we're going to talk about a really fun party they have coming up. It's a benefit fundraiser sponsored by the Knights of Columbus. Joanne, can you tell us about what is it? When is it?
It is the Mardi Gras Cajun Fete, which kicks off Mardi Gras season.
Fun.
And it will be on April 14th. Excuse me, I'm in the wrong event. It will be on February 10th,
which
is a Saturday,
okay,
at St. Anne's Parish Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to feature everything nice about Mardi Gras. We're going to have all kinds of Cajun food and Cajun music, a Cajun costume contest.
Oh.
It should take on the appearance of Mardi Gras. So if you like Cajun shrimp and Louisiana crab cakes and red beans and rice and king cakes and things like that, I mean, it's going to be the place to be.
Sounds delicious and festive. And now Mardi Gras, now I grew up Catholic, so I know all about Ash Wednesday, right, beginning of Lent.
Right.
Mardi Gras is the day before, and doesn't it mean Fat Tuesday or something?
Well, Fat Tuesday is technically what kicks it off,
right,
from what I understand. I was raised Catholic, too, and they didn't teach Mardi Gras.
Right, yeah.
At Sacred Heart.
We were all about guilt and ashes.
Exactly.
We didn't really get into the partying part
That's right,
of it.
The ashes. I'm still cleaning those ashes off my head. But it is the beginning of Lent. It does start it off. And I think the idea basically is this is the last chance saloon to have a party before you have to give up everything that's important and fun in your life for the weeks of Lent.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, let it all hang out. Great. And I understand, so this is a really special thing. This isn't, you know, REACH putting on a party for yourselves to raise money. This is another organization, the Knights of Columbus, stepping up to throw a party for you. How did that all come about?
Isn't that nice?
It's super.
There's a gentleman at the Knights. His name is Amos, and he is one of our job coaches for REACH. So Amos goes around with one of the individuals that we serve and helps them in their employment situation. One-to-one, you know, guided assistance with, and I don't know which area he's working in, but he provides personal assistance to somebody in their quest to do whatever job it is they do.
Right.
And so he's got a long-term association with REACH, and he got it in his head, I think it was last year for the first time, that his organization, the Knights of Columbus, could do something nice for REACH. You know, the Knights are a service organization like many other service organizations. It's not about just getting together and drinking coffee and having a good old time. It's about, you know, giving back
to the
community, doing something worthwhile and helping another organization or another group of people out. So he put together this Mardi Gras event last year, and it was... I wasn't around for it then. I was someplace else. But he said it went well, but he could use some help. So this year, my boss, Millie Ryan, asked me to work with Amos on it and, you know, kind of give him a hand so he didn't feel like he was, you know, shouldering the whole burden of putting an event together on his own.
Right. Well, Mr. Kissel sounds like a real knight in shining armor.
I know.
And so, so the funds raised at this event will help support REACH programs. Can you tell us, maybe for those of us who aren't familiar, who are some of the folks that you serve and what kinds of activities do you do?
REACH serves people with developmental, intellectual disabilities. We serve children that are behind, who are not keeping up with their age. Because we serve people who are mostly dealing with disabilities as a lifelong situation, we will serve people throughout their entire lives. And sometimes, particularly with the younger children, we can help them get caught up. And then they become more self-sustaining, more integrated into their age group and class group. and do real well. But we serve developmental disabilities, which means if you go down and you break your leg and you're in a wheelchair for 3 months, mm-hmm. we don't work with you,
right?
Because that's not developmental. You're going to get better.
Right.
The people REACH serves don't recover traditionally from the kinds of situations. So we're talking, you know, cerebral palsy and, you know, serious vision impairment or hearing impairment or a range of situations.
Right. And maybe some folks who, like you say, just need a little bit of a boost, some job guidance, helping kind of get through an interview, something that maybe they haven't experienced before. But maybe there are probably other people who really have profound needs.
They are often referred to in this line of work as medically complex.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking people who are wheelchair users all the time.
Right.
And they need help getting up, showering, dressing, eating. But even those people have something to offer. And because we provide employment opportunities, either out in the community or through one of the enterprises that we have, you know, our goal, our vision is to help them meet their fullest potential in whatever way works for them. So we have a shredding business, and even somebody in a wheelchair can sit and operate a shredding machine, right?
Right.
We have a custodial business, an enterprise that REACH runs, and even if you have cerebral palsy, you know, if you can perform certain tasks, you can operate within the structure of a custodial business. We have that. We have the canvas, the art gallery, and people are more acquainted, I think, with the canvas because it's a little bit more out in the community.
Right.
We're part of the Visitors Bureau group of arts organizations, and we do First Friday, I think. And we just had Mike and Mercedes in here yesterday, I think, talking about Mike's show on First Friday. We're very excited. He's one of our long-term recipients of services, and he's a terrific guy.
And you make incredible leggings, which I enjoy.
I know.
I get compliments wherever I go.
You know, I wish we can't take credit for the leggings, but it's the artists we serve
right.
who come up with the designs, and then we have whatever company Mercedes goes to to make them. But,
and
we have all kinds of things that are manufactured as gifts and souvenirs for the summer based on the art that people produce.
Right. So the canvas is very visible, but I imagine the part of your mission at REACH is, you know, when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, like people with disabilities tended to still be kind of shunted away.
The other.
And their parents kind of kept them at home, and they weren't really meant to be out there because it was embarrassing or whatever. Totally different era today. How do you feel like people that you're serving are treated in the community? How do they feel accepted? Do they feel a part of life here in Juneau?
I think for the majority of individuals, they really do because of organizations like REACH and SAIL and Catholic Community Service. I mean, there's a number of organizations that really help individuals with disabilities to integrate and become included in whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think society as a whole has been changing its attitude about working with folks who have disabilities.
Right.
I think, too, because we're more creative in what we think people who are differently abled than many of us, we think differently about what they can do. And so we give them more opportunities. And well, for example, if you go to Costco, you know, the people who do the little food demos at the ends of the aisle, keep you snacking while you're shopping.
Oh, that's my downfall, Costco sample.
I know. Go to Costco for lunch. Just keep shopping. They'll feed you as you go. You know?
Good thing they don't do well in the wine shop. That would be a problem.
I know. Yeah, there's definitely none of that in the wine shop.
Okay.
But we have people who are REACH recipients who are doing those food demos.
Right.
Because it is within their skill set to do it. So one of the things that's really important to us is that we identify the skills that people have and we help them find an opportunity to use them that allows them to be included like other people in the community. And I think, to me, that's really meaningful because they stop being the other and over there and out of the group. They become part of everything that's going on around them, and they should be.
And it benefits us because, we're all getting older. You know, there may come a time when I'm in a wheelchair and I'm going to, you know, and so to think about ourselves, like everyone, I do some volunteer work with the disabled, and one person told me, you know, we all have disabilities of one kind or another. Some of them are more or less visible, But through the spectrum of our lives, we go through periods where we need assistance. And when we see folks like your clients out in the community being productive, contributing, we feel better about our own times when we're going to need help. And
that's
that
true.
We're not going to be on the outside.
And that is so true. And I think people would really be surprised to really know how many places we have installed reach individuals doing jobs, movie theaters, grocery stores, mm-hmm. craft stores. I mean, they're really out there all over, not just in the enterprises that we operate, but they are definitely out in the community. And it's meaningful for us as an agency, but it's really meaningful for them. They'll tell you they love to go to work.
Sure.
They love to. I mean, they would put in extra time off the clock. I mean, they really feel that sense of purpose and accomplishment.
Sure.
You know, probably more so than I do at my job, because I don't have that comparison of having limited options and opportunities. And so this is it's important for all of us, I think, to recognize the fact that we can include people. It's not it's not really very hard. So if you need shredding, we have shredding.
Okay, actually I do. I have a big box in my basement office. Okay, I will call you up because it is tax time to get rid of all the old stuff.
And if you're in the federal building, go to the 9th Street Cafe. It's on the second floor.
Oh, that's a reach.
We have a cafe. We have a cafe.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you say it's not that hard to include, but it does require resources, transportation, education, occupational therapy, those kinds of things. So you have another fundraiser coming up to help support that.
We do.
In addition to the Cajun party?
In addition to the Cajun, I can't wait. By the way, about the Cajun thing, the 9th Street Cafe is going to make the king cakes and the beignets.
Oh, right. Is the king cake, is that the one with the little
baby? With the
baby?
Little baby. You bake
which
a plastic.
Which is a little creepy, but it's cute. It's festive.
You get a prize.
You get a
plastic baby in your piece of cake, you get a prize.
Plastic baby.
I don't know what the
don't
prize
swallow
is.
Don't swallow it.
No, don't swallow it. You'll notice it as soon as you bite into it, I'm sure. But that's going to come out of the 9th Street Cafe.
Fun.
So that's pretty
good job, those guys. Okay.
So the next big thing coming up for Reach then is our 40th anniversary celebration. And people don't realize we've been around for 40
that's
years.
Amazing.
And we serve 7 communities in Southeast Alaska. So we're although Juneau is our main office and our biggest office, we are a regional service agency and basically do the same kinds of things. Even in towns where we don't have an office, we send people remotely to do things
great.
Like infant learning programs or early child education or, whatever the different programs are that are being brought out into the other communities. So in honor of our 40th anniversary, we're going to have a 40th anniversary celebration that will be April 14th at Elizabeth Paradovich Hall. And we're pretty excited about that, too. In addition to having the party itself, which is kind of our opportunity, I guess, to pat ourselves on the back for making it, for 40 years.
Absolutely.
And continuing to expand and, broaden our service area. We're going to draw for our raffle. So we're doing right now, we've started our raffle for Alaska Airlines tickets and several great visitor excursion opportunities. And so we'll be doing that as well same night.
So how do I get raffle tickets?
I just happen to know where to get them. Oh, my gosh, I'm
might.
So glad you asked
I
me.
I think you might have a hot tip for me.
I didn't bring them with me.
Okay.
But if you go to the Canvas website to the store where it says shop, you can buy them online.
Oh, okay.
Or if you want, I can come back tomorrow with tickets in my hand.
Okay.
They're $10 each or 6 for 50.
Okay. Yeah. Good deal.
No raffles at the Mardi Gras. But I think Amos is putting together some silent auction things and a costume contest. So it's going to be kind of a busy late winter, early spring for us.
Sounds like. Okay, so the Mardi Gras Cajun Fete, February 10th, 6:30 to 8:30 at St. Anne's Parish Hall, $25. And is that reachak.org? Is that the best place to go for more info?
Yes, reachak.org. And again, you can buy tickets for that at the Canvas store.
Mm-hmm.
At thecanvasarts.org. And you can link to that from reachak.org.
Okay.
It all links.
The Canvas Arts or just
canvasarts.org?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'll check that out.
Reachak.org has a link to it. And then, or you can just call us up and say you want tickets. I personally deliver tickets.
Yeah.
Amos will bring you tickets. He's got them with him all the time now.
Okay. Well, I never win anything, but I will buy raffle.
But somebody's going to
win
some stuff, right?
Somebody will win.
That'll
somebody
nice.
Will find the baby. Okay.
That's right.
So one last word before we say goodbye. About those of us in the community who think of ourselves as able-bodied, what do you wish we knew or understood more about the folks that you serve? How can we be better toward them?
I think just by understanding that everybody has ability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may be different. Differently abled is a phrase that you hear more and more these days. I think, you know, we're all trying to be better at how we describe people and how they are, who they are, what their particular situation is. And rather than think of somebody maybe who is in a walker or a wheelchair or doesn't communicate adequately or at all as being disabled, they do have ability nonetheless, and they are differently abled. And one of the greatest examples of that is the canvas. You would be astonished to see the people who produce some of that amazing art. I couldn't do what they do, and I feel like I'm pretty much fully abled.
Right.
But we're talking people who are so intuitive on a creative scale that it is astonishing. So, you know, just think about it as just being different. We're not all the same. Not all dogs are black, you know, and not all cats are white. And so it's just about being different and being okay with people being different.
Yeah. Something they to celebrate and discover and not to be afraid of.
And they can still be included. There's still a place for them.
Great. Thank you for making that place for them here in Juneau.
Thanks.
So good to talk with you, Joanne.
Thank
and best
you so
of luck
much.
With all your fundraisers.
Thank you.
You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, joined in the studio now with Pat Race from Alaska Robotics, our favorite graphic arts store. And he's here with an artist, Jessica Hanlon, who's going to be featured at their First Friday event. Jessica, Pat, welcome to the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, Jessica, you are a watercolor painter, right? Can you kind of, what's your, kind of describe the work that you're doing these days?
Sure. Yeah, I
didn't do watercolor for a long time. Well, I just actually started watercoloring 2.5 years ago. I went to school for art, but never touched the medium. And then probably out of desperation, I was a part of a group show at the Canvas, and I painted a salmon, and I didn't have that long of a time frame to do it in, and so watercolor I knew was a fairly quick turnaround if I wanted it to be. So I painted a fish, and I loved it, and I had a lot of really positive feedback, and since then I've just sort of started having small shows, and Pat asked me this summer.
I think it was this summer I came down on the dock, and you had a bunch of stuff on display at the port along with kind of the kelp salsa and that little area behind the library. And it was really like a nice discovery to go out on a sunny day and like meander over behind the library and follow the smell of the good food and then just come across this like beautiful artwork. And I was like, oh my gosh,
Juno.
This is your work. And I knew that Jessica had been doing great work and I'd seen a lot of it, but it was the first time I'd seen it all kind of in one collection in one place. And so I invited her to come do a show really of like whatever she wanted. And I was like, you should do a show. And like, I trust you, do something amazing. And, you know, the pieces that I've caught glimpses of are beautiful. And she's done a lot of screen printing, and her foray into watercolor has been really successful. And
okay.
Yeah.
So in addition to, after that fish, what came next? What other subject matter are you working with?
I had a small show at a place that isn't in the Senate building anymore, and I had a couple birds, and I really fell in love with birds, and then also these a bear and a fox with like flowers and sort of around it, and I just animals, I guess.
You really gravitate toward animals. Why is that?
I guess growing up here, I've just been always really personally attached to animals, and just figuring out different ways to portray them. And I guess with watercolor, for me, I'm just trying to capture a moment, and there's a lot of use of white space in my paintings, so I just catching a bird, and the only thing that's really in focus is the face, and everything else is sort of diffused into white space, and same with the other animals, so that's sort of the moment I'm trying to catch with watercolor.
And do you use brush only, or do you go in with fine detail with ink or anything like that?
It's all brush, down to super, super small brushes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Does the unexpected ever happen? That seems like with watercolor, there's a certain loss of control. The paper might absorb a little more of the liquid and things kind of spread.
I guess I'm not, unlike other watercolor, I wasn't trained in watercolor. I went to art school, but they didn't teach it. So I've sort of been teaching myself, and I don't know if I'm doing it wrong. I might be, but I'm only working on super small parts at any given time.
Okay.
So the control is there a little bit, but then as I diffuse out, it gets out of control, but that's sort of the point.
Right. So would you call it impressionistic or
I would say realistic.
Realism.
Yeah. But it definitely has some whimsy to it. Like there's it's a lot of like bright colors, and I feel like you really accentuate the colors and the and very sharp detail in the parts you want to draw the eye to. I guess like you talked a little bit about the paper texture, and I thought that was really fascinating how you're talking about building and working with the texture of the paper and the paint rather than kind of pushing it back against the two. Could you explain that a little bit? Or you talked about like how sometimes in like with acrylic paints, you're masking the surface you're working on.
Oh.
But in watercolor paint, you're kind of like working with and yeah.
Yeah, I guess with the watercolor paper, I use a cold press. So the feeling of the paper is there, and I am not really working against it. So I splatter, and the paint stays where it's supposed to as much as a splatter can. Not really.
Right.
Like, it's not a smooth surface, and
exactly. I just thought it was really neat that you were taking into account kind of the texture of the paper and not only just the texture of the paint and what you're trying to create and not just the shape of the image, but all of those different elements.
Yeah, I guess it's just a moment, and then this paper is just sort of the medium, and I don't really let it affect the paint as much as maybe I should, but it's also sort of the point, I guess, in the moment.
Well, I like the idea of seeing your work in Alaska Robotics, where a lot of what's on the shelves is has that dark outlines, is very, you know, smooth paper, and very bold and glossy. And I'm imagining your work is going to seem very soft by contrast. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, Pat, how do you think the Alaska Robotics crowd will respond to that juxtaposition?
I think it pairs very well, actually. It's it has a very strong, like, graphic design element to it. I think that maybe that comes from your screen printing background, but there's a very good sense of space and form. And it's the kind of thing that you could see in, like, panel design in, like, a comic book or in poster design or something like that, where there's a lot of thought put into composition. So it's not just trying to recreate, not just trying to recreate a scene from nature, but trying to find a pleasing shape and form. And so it's a... I think it fits in really well with the kind of work that we're doing. And we have a lot of graphic novels in the store that do use watercolor. Mm-hmm. And so it might not have word bubbles and, like ninjas in it, but it definitely fits in with, like, with
zombie?
Yeah, exactly. There aren't a lot of zombies, but maybe her work will go that direction someday.
Well, but I think also, too, for aspiring artists and even maybe some veterans who feel maybe a little bit... maybe they've had some success with their graphic novels or their comics and they feel a little hemmed in by that, or they've been pigeonholed. And the idea that you, Jessica, could pick up, you know, a totally different medium and be successful in it, and that you don't have to stick in the box in the panel of what you've been doing.
Yeah, and a priority for us is also just sharing, like, really great local artwork. So
right.
Whatever
it is.
I'm amazed and honored that she will do a show with us. So that's
great.
Fantastic. It's good for it's good for us, and it's good for her, and it's good for the community.
Yay. Okay, yeah. So give me the details. Where are you? What time?
Oh, yeah, we're at Front Street, 220 Front Street, right there sandwiched between the Viking and the movie theater.
Okay.
And we'll be open for First Friday, kind of the typical, 4:30-ish onward. And we'll have some crackers and cheese and
I was
going to
ask about
that.
I need cheese
artwork.
And crackers. If you're going to want me to show up, you got to have the cheese and crackers.
We will have snacks for sure. We generally have quite a few snacks. And, come on by and meet the artist and see the show. And if you can't make it on First Friday, stop in. It'll be up throughout the month. And
okay, great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. And that's this Friday. It's February already.
Yeah, I know.
It's
isn't happening. It wild?
Oh, my God. Well, January did feel like it lasted forever. So
yeah.
I think we're ready for February.
Nice, long, cold January.
Great.
Yeah.
And I understand you've got something else on your radar coming up.
I do.
The Jump Society Film Fest. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Jump Society is a collection of locally made short films. And there's a festival this weekend. We do it twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our winter festival, and it's all locally made short films, and it's at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. You can find it on Thursday night at 7 or Friday at 7 and 9, and then Saturday at 4:30 there's a matinee and a 7 o'clock show. And so come on out to that. That's a good time. You can go see the art show and then go over and catch the films.
Perfect. Great. Okay. Well, thank you both so much for coming in. Jessica, good luck. Keep those watercolors flowing.
Thank you.
And displaying, and we'll see you on First Friday.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Take care, guys.
Hi, this is Ray Troll from Ketchikan's Ratfish Wranglers. We're thrilled to play our fishy style of rock and roll in Juneau for the America's Salmon Forest Celebration on Friday, February 2nd at the Jack. On Thursday evening, we'll record a special one-hour TV concert at 360. We hope you can join us for both. Cameras roll on Thursday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at 360 in the KTOO building. Admission is free.
This is Bird Note. Imagine this Canada goose paddling along on a cold winter day. Can you guess how many feathers cover this goose? Hundreds? Thousands? A single Canada goose has between 20 and 25,000 feathers. A smaller bird, like a sparrow or wren, might have 7 to 10,000. Those feathers are uniquely designed to help the bird fly, shed water, or display distinctive markings. A great many feathers are the short, fluffy kind, the down, whose purpose is to insulate the bird from the cold. Birds survive in sub-zero weather by fluffing their feathers, creating layers of air and feathers. Just a fraction of an inch of this insulation can keep a bird's body temperature at 104 degrees, even in freezing weather. People learned years ago how well goose down insulates and began stuffing comforters, sleeping bags, and clothing with it. More recently, we've developed artificial substitutes. But geese and other birds continue to get along just fine with the original material. January is a good time to begin a new volunteer activity, and Audubon chapters can help you find your niche. After all, niche in French means to nest. To learn about opportunities, begin with a visit to birdnote.org.
And you're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, joined now in the studio by Bridget Lujan. She's here to talk about Juno's Got Talent. This is a program of Juno Dance Theater. And I understand, Bridget, it's in its third year. Is that right?
Yes. Thank you for having me, Julie.
Oh, you're so welcome. Now, I have seen and enjoyed this event the last 2 years. And I remember the first year, no one kind of knew what it was. It was an experiment. I showed up at the Jack that night. There was a line out the door. Huge success. So tell me, so people who haven't been, what kind of event is it? What kind of talent? What can we expect?
Exactly. And that's the hope, is that we have lines out the door again. So the event itself, it's April 7th. It's a talent competition. It should look and feel different than the other fundraisers in town. We welcome performing artists and other types of talent that might not be in the usual singer dancer scheme of things. But we've got a bar, you know, we try to create a nice adult night out event for folks to come and drink and have a good time and enjoy some good entertainment. There are little mini, there's a balloon pop raffle in the middle where you can win a prize, and that's another little element to the fundraiser that the event is. And it's at the Jack again this year from 7 to 9 on April 7th.
Okay, so you're looking for audience members, of course, but first you got to get a show together.
Right.
So how do you find your talent?
Can't have a talent show without the talent. So this is the all call for talent in Juno. I know you're out there. We've got singers and dancers. Of course, that's the easy way out.
Uh-huh.
But if you juggle, or I just heard Pat talking about yodeling, I think he's
That's what this town needs, more yodeling.
So if you juggle, if you're a magician, if you balance or hula hoop, if you offer a different kind of talent, we want to see you too. And auditions are this Saturday, February 3rd, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Juno Dance Theater's studio, which is out in the valley on Airport Way in the Litho building.
Okay. So do people have to pre-register to audition or just show up? How does that work?
Yes. Well, I can tell you we won't turn anyone away if you do show up.
Okay.
But, yes, please do register out at junodance.org. There's an application where you get to tell us a little bit about your talent and your act. We need acts between 2 and 3 minutes long.
Okay.
There is a $20 application fee that helps us weed out folks who are serious about committing to the event. And to the extent possible, we load up everybody. The audition is a little bit of a misnomer. We try to include most every act that comes our way, as long as it's stage ready. But we need an opportunity to see what type of talent you have to offer and where in the show we can put that act.
Right. Okay. And it is a competition. Are there judges? I think I remember there was does the audience vote? I forget how it works.
Yes. Some of all of that.
Okay.
So we have 8 judges on our panel, and among them this year, we've got Todd Hunt and Jesse Keel, Representative Sam Keto, former winners Jocelyn Miles and Noah Tech Post. We've got Michelle Amore from JDHS, James Sullivan from Perseverance, and Mark Miller, JD Superintendent.
Wow, all the big guns.
District.
Okay.
And then the audience is the 9th judge.
Oh, great.
And they vote by putting dollars in the boxes for their favorite act. And the winner, this is the nice part, the first prize is $500.
Whoa.
That's a good chunk of change.
Okay, when are auditions?
Right? So we think it's a nice incentive, and we want to just create a lovely, fun evening and make a great event of it.
Right. Super fun. Okay. So, and you mentioned wanting to make this kind of a nice adult evening. There are, you know, children are welcome to audition too, but you would like to get some older performers. And I love that because I feel like, you know,
the kids in town have a lot of opportunity to perform.
Right.
They got all kinds of stuff. They got dance recitals. They got music recitals. You know,
right.
What about us? Like, we still want to get out there and do stuff. So.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. As JDT, as an organization, serves primarily children. We love kids, and we love to have kids in the show. So our language is a little bit different this year, whereas we really tried for family-friendly in the past. We decided, no, we want more of a party. So we say performers of all ages are welcome, but we do have the bar on site.
Right.
We are creating more of an adult ambiance. And Erica Lee and Salisa Thol are our MCs again.
Uh-huh.
We've got
fun.
Haley Duran and Allison Holtkamp directing. So, I mean,
great.
These folks come from, very polished theater and production backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. And stand-up comedy, so there will probably
be
a few laughs.
Well, I'm hoping. And that's the other thing. Semi-pros, don't feel like this show isn't for you. It's a great opportunity. In fact, I'm hoping some Folk Fest acts that are, because it's a week before Folk Fest.
Right.
So
good.
Anybody who wants to give their act a dry run in front of an audience and possibly win a prize, you know, we want the pros too.
Brilliant.
not just the undiscovered talent.
Gotcha. Okay. Excellent. So what else? So Juno Dance Theater, of course, they're best known in town for the Nutcracker, which we all love. What else is happening there this spring that you want to share?
We've got our spring showcase coming up at the end of April. April 26th and 27th,
mm-hmm.
and a mixed repertoire of advanced dancers in ballet and new works created for JDT from guest choreographers. We had a gal, Heidi Rood, that was here last summer teaching at our intensive. She created a new contemporary ballet piece. And Anna McDowell will premiere another piece. She's one of our advanced students.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of things to showcase there. And then, of course, we've got the Juno Fine Arts Camp running the month of June.
Right.
That is our baby. We love that we produce that.
Mm-hmm.
And Electra Gardnier is going to be our director again for that.
Oh,
so
fun.
More information coming up soon.
Okay.
On Fine Arts Camp. But.
Great. Okay. And where do I go to find out about all this stuff?
JunoDance.org is our website, and there are pages and links for the Juno's Got Talent audition registration and information on the spring showcase dates. Those tickets aren't on sale yet, but they will be shortly. And then you can look through photos and other information on our events and calendar.
Great. Okay. Well, Bridget, thanks so much for coming in. I hope you see some fantastic talent.
I hope so, too. I'll let you know when tickets go on sale.
Do. We'll bring you back in. Thanks,
Thank
Bridget.
Thank you, Julie.
Welcome to the quarterly meeting of the William J. Erickson Individual Native Corporation, or WINC as I like to call it, board meeting inside my head. William's high-pressure job and unusual coping method backfires when his imaginary board of directors hijacks his real life. William Inc., by Anubiak playwright Lucas Rowley, is a world premiere at Perseverance Theater, January 24th to February 17th. Tickets at Hearthside Books, The Jack, ptalaska.org, and 463-TIXS.
Juno, support KTOO by eating and having a good time at the 2018 KTOO and Taku Fishery Seafood Festival. 8 restaurants are serving up seafood creations from locally sourced salmon, halibut, rockfish, and spot prawns. Featuring desserts, live music, and a no-holds-barred by salt with support from Alaskan Brewing Company and the Malga Distillery. Get your tickets at KTOO.org.
I was a small fry, all I wanted to do is get in the stream and swim right up to you. I want your love, baby. I want your love. I got a one-way ticket right on up to your shore now. Let me in, baby, please don't lock that door. It's my biology. It's in my genes.
Some people say there's lots of fish in the sea. I think they're right, cause there's one there for me. Don't slip away, honey.
Oh, don't cut that line.
One of these days, I'm gonna grow me a snout, grow a humpback baby, and check things out. That's my destiny, sugar. My fate to be.
Oh, yes, what I say.
Oh, baby, spawn, spawn, spawn.
it turns me on. I wanna spill my milk until the break of dawn. Let's have some fun, darling, all night long. And when you flip your fins and you shake your lift tail when you dig that bed, I sure hope my engine don't fail. Don't let it down, baby. Don't swim away.
Yeah, I'd swim 100 miles. I always love to travel. I'd go 1,000 more if I could get you in the gravel. My love is strong,
oh,
baby.
Yeah, baby.
You know me. When my number is up and it's time to meet my maker, I'll be spawning up in heaven with Jim and Tammy Baker.
Amen.
Up in the sky.
Hello, yeah. Yeah, we'll break the off.
And that was Spawn Till You Die by Ray Troll and the Ratfish Wranglers, hometown heroes. They're going to be playing here at KTOO tomorrow and I think Friday here at 360. So go to ktoo.org for more details on that. Be sure to hear those guys. They're a ton of fun. Well, I'm Julie Copins. This is a Juno Afternoon, and I'm joined in the studio now by Dr. Bridget Weiss. She's Director of Student Services for the Juno School District, here to talk about pre-K programs. So pre-K, what is it? It's not kindergarten. It's something else. What is it?
You're right. It's what comes right before kindergarten.
Great.
So it really is programming for 3- and 4-year-olds with the effort of ensuring that we have kids really ready for kindergarten.
Hmm. And what are some things that might be barriers to kindergarten readiness for some 3- and 4-year-olds in our community?
What we found is many of our 5-year-olds who show up at kindergarten don't have full advantage of being ready for that type of classroom construct and environment. And so we're as a community in Juneau right now putting a lot of focus on what kind of opportunities we can create for 3- and 4-year-olds in that effort to make sure everybody has a chance. Every kid has the chance to be equally prepared. Some of those barriers are simply availability. Finding a program that meets both the parents' schedule needs, that provides the right opportunities while they're in the program. And so we have been working on programming that might fit a variety of needs through a variety of programs.
Okay, so tell me, what are some of my options if I have a 3-year-old and I'm looking ahead to maybe next fall, where might my child be served?
So we have some opportunity in Juneau in private sector. So we have, certainly in Juneau, there are programs that exist in the community that are either privately based or potentially based in churches, et cetera. We also have inside the Juneau School District a couple of different programs. We have one program through our Montessori school called Children's House, and that's a combined classroom where we have pre-K and kinders together, that there is a charge for that. We also have our special needs programming for pre-K, where we have typically developing peers alongside some of our special needs kids, and they work collaboratively together in class. Those programs run 2.5 hours a day, and we have morning sessions and afternoon sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Those cost $200 a month. Then this year we started a program called Kinder Ready, and it is for 4-year-olds and some 3-year-olds who and it is housed right now in Harborview, and we also have morning sessions and afternoon sessions. Those are 3 hours apiece, and there's a charge of $200 as well to participate there. One of the things that we're exploring in Juneau is how to expand that programming. Mm. So how do we, for instance, offer more full day pre-K
right.
offerings? Because that does meet the needs of some of our families. Transportation is one barrier,
mm.
and that is a real costly part of programming
right.
is transportation. So we continue to look for sources to sort of break down some of those barriers.
Right. And I imagine it's difficult because I know as a parent of a school-aged child, it's not like there's a lot of extra cash floating around the school district. So how do you meet all those needs? Obviously, you know, we all see the benefit of getting kids ready for kindergarten, but you have to balance it against kids who are in school and have needs.
And absolutely, and that is the challenge. There are competing needs.
Right.
What we also know is that our investment in pre-elementary learning pays tenfold over dollars that we may invest later.
Right.
So it's all about preventative care and teaching of our 3- and 4-year-olds.
Right.
We are seeking opportunities everywhere we can for funding. We have received the state legislature has been generous in terms of pre-elementary learning in the last few years, so we are participating in a grant, as are many communities across the state, with money from the state. We also just received a Promise Neighborhoods STEPS grant that is also a regional grant. So it's really exciting because we have partners across neighbors here in Southeast Alaska that are all participating in this grant. So we'll be able to collaboratively work and plan together as well through that. We've had conversations with the Assembly here in Juneau, and they are interested in listening and thinking about how the city and borough may play a part. The agencies in Juneau are working together, and it's really
right.
exciting time right now. We're working together with CBJ, with AEYC, which is the Association mm-hmm. for Educating Young Children, with Head Start. Clinkett High to Head Start also collaborates with the school district.
Great.
So a lot of good minds thinking together right now in this area.
Good. And coming up with some great solutions, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
So where do I as a parent go to start accessing these resources and start making some decisions for my family?
Great question. For our integrated preschool program, where I talked about we have typically developing
mm-hmm.
peers, we start making those, taking those applications and making those decisions in April. And for Kinder Ready, we'll be hopefully expanding in the fall
okay.
to more programming, maybe even in the Valley, have a Valley site
mm-hmm.
as well. So on the Juneau website, JuneauSchools.org, there is a Apply for Preschools tab.
Okay.
And if you click in there, you'll see both an integrated application
right.
and a Kinder Ready application.
Right.
And you can always call the Student Services Department for more information, but there is quite a bit of at least access to the application there.
Okay, that sounds like a great place to start. You know, it seems like historically in this country, school starts at kindergarten. And some of us did preschool when we were little.
Mm-hmm.
I loved preschool. I
mm-hmm.
thought it was great. It's become kind of like pretty much most kids do preschool now. It's understood that it's really essential. What are some things that young ones learn in preschool that they really can't learn in the home or at daycare? Or
I think it's a combination of things. I think there are definitely lots of things that families can do within the family structure that enable kids to really be ready as well. It's really a complement of things
right.
done at home and in a pre-K setting. Self-regulation is one of the pieces that we find most challenging for students who have not had a pre-elementary learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
They often come to kindergarten, and the structure of having 20 other children around them, as an example, is just a little more chaotic or challenging than we would like. So a lot of self-regulation pieces, as well as the academic. In our Kinder Ready program, we focus on academic and self-regulation, time outdoors, and sort of a whole child picture there, and it's really a nice blend of programming. So what we really hope for in Juneau as a community in working with Best Starts, which is an initiative looking at how to generate some funding for pre-elementary, to expand really to the point where in the few years down the road in Juneau, we had universal pre-K, where no matter what challenges a family might face or not, there is a place for them
right.
to access pre-elementary learning for their child. Because the more that we can enable students to be kids to be ready for kindergarten, again, down the road,
right.
the costs go down dramatically. The number of kids that can access post-secondary education starts when they're 3 and 4. Wow. And giving them the best advantage.
Right. Well, so how far do you feel like that goal is toward, you know, for achieving it?
Well, I am a very optimistic person, so I don't want to quantify it. Okay. However,
it's within reach.
It is, but I really do believe in the power of groupthink, and we have the right people discussing and engaged in this topic right now, from our Juno Economic Development team to AEYC to Tlingit Haida Head Start, the school district, citizens that are putting their minds together to generate resources. So there is great momentum right now, and I would hope that in a number of years we really could say that in Juno there's a place for every single 4-year-old for sure, and maybe every 3- and 4-year-old that has access. You mentioned obstacles. For our most at-risk students, those obstacles are higher. And so we really do need to build a system that enables us to knock those obstacles down for those children that are most at risk for not being ready for learning in kindergarten.
Right. And I'm sure you're looking at, like, what resources do we have in this community? You know, I know a lot of soon-to-be-retired state employees who are going to have a lot of time on their hands and who might love being involved in early childhood education. So drawing on some of those community resources, volunteers, people who might want to go back for retraining and work with young children, I mean, is that part of it?
Absolutely. As we move forward and increase our capacity for serving kids, we certainly are generating the need for people who are interested in early childhood, trained in early childhood, or willing to be trained.
Right.
So absolutely, that is something that we will be looking toward, is making sure that we have a high quality in our community preschools and the district preschools. So it would also be really cool if, let's say, in 5 years, that there was a level of child care and a level of pre-elementary learning in Juno that it didn't matter where you access that in Juno. There was a certain level of quality that we knew, research-based, was going to prepare all kids. So it didn't really matter which program you chose. It was of high quality and getting the results that we need.
Right. That sounds great. And I imagine it's good for the older kids to have the little ones around. Do you notice, do the older kids maybe kind of stand a little straighter and try to set a better example when they've got the little ones around
it
the
school? Really is fun to watch. We have integrated preschool in every one of our elementary schools.
Oh,
so each
great.
Of our elementary schools has a preschool program there. And it makes so much sense in terms of facility use, you know, programming use, and the environment. So, and preparing kids that they can access pre-elementary in the same school, as an example, where they might then go to
that makes for such
elementary.
A happier first day of kindergarten, no tears, because you've already been there.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, and it really does add. I was once a principal of a pre-K through fifth grade school, and it really does sort of build in that full picture for people, and it's really engaging to have those early learners in the school.
Wonderful. Well, Bridget Weiss, thank you for doing this work. It's so important, and I'm sure what you say is so helpful to so many parents. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me today.
Okay, take care. Thanks for listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins. All Things Considered is next.
Equity Institute and professors Nell Irvin Painter and Ibram Kendi. Music by Blue Dot Sessions, Lee Rosevere, Kevin McLeod, Lena Polera, and Sometimes Why. The Invention of Race is a production of the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871.